Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined from Tallahassee by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hi, Zach.
And joining me from Palm Beach is Palm Beach Post political editor Antonio Finns. Hey, Antonio.
Hello, gentlemen.
Well, even as Florida's coronavirus outbreak has reached alarming new levels, state leaders are ordering every school in the state to reopen in August. Meanwhile, the largest county in Florida is taking steps to roll back its reopening, putting more pressure on Governor Ron DeSantis to take statewide action to contain the virus. And President Donald Trump is shaking up his Florida campaign, a sign that he may be nervous about his standing in America's largest battleground state. We'll talk about all that and more, but first, gentlemen, did you bring some numbers this week? John, how about you?
Zach, I've gone kind of big this week. My number is 7,500.
7,500. All right. What about you, Antonio?
I am going to go with 117.
And I'll go below all that with a 3. Remember those numbers, folks. Write them down. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. One of the most pressing public policy issues in the nation right now is how to approach the upcoming school year. Many Florida schools are just a month away from reopening, but have yet to outline how they plan to operate in a manner that keeps children and school staff safe. There's a lot of debate about whether schools should reopen at all in states like Florida that are virus hotspots. Well, Florida Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran is strongly in favor of getting schools open. He weighed in this week and declared that every school in Florida, including charter schools, must reopen their physical campuses and provide classroom instruction. Obviously, parents can still keep their kids home if they want to and do distance learning, but Corcoran's mandate attracted a lot of attention, with critics saying it's reckless to force schools to reopen given the level of virus transmissions in Florida. Others argue that it's absolutely essential to have kids in school, both for their own good and to allow parents to work and keep the economy going. Antonio, you've said in the past that you thought DeSantis was correctly reading the public mood and pushing to reopen. Do you think most people also want to see schools reopening in the current environment?
Hey, what we're hearing from everybody, from politicians to school leaders to educators to parents, is this is a really tricky one. I mean, there's a big difference between reopening the economy and forcing kids back to school. That goes down to, you know, you can versus you must. Yeah, you can open up a business up to 50% or whatever the rule is in your jurisdiction. But schools is a different matter. You know, schools are compulsory. This is part of, it's in the Florida Constitution. And if your kid is registered in a particular public school that reopens, then you got to send your kid. That's the way it is in Florida. That's the law. In fact, you know, I put two kids through public schools, and I remember plenty of open houses, you know, at the start of the school year when we read the Riot Act, that if, you know, 5 unexcused absences and you'll have the sheriff's office knocking on your door to find out why you're depriving your child of an education. This is serious business. And on top of that, we are now getting reports of, you know, infections among younger people. At Florida International University, the infectious disease expert there was on TV the other night talking about that she's seeing in 20-somethings and 30-something-year-olds coming in, and they're feeling great, but they tested positive, so they just want to get checked out. She does a lung X-ray, and she's saying she's seeing damage to lungs, including scarring. So what all this means is that, you know, if politically, if you force these schools to open and you force these kids to go to school, and you start having outbreaks in some of these schools, that's going to be politically damaging. I mean, I'm hearing that from everybody.
Right.
You know, one thing is the bar down the street, adults showed up, they had a good time, they got infections. Well, you know what? That's on you guys for not showing personal responsibility. But children can't make that decision. You know, adults make that decision for them.
But they're still going to allow distance learning. I mean, you could keep your kid home and do online. They'll have teachers doing that. And so I think the argument that they're making is we want to provide this option for people. We want to be able to say, you know, if you're not able to do distance learning at home or you don't want to do it and you need to go to work and we're going to open these schools. I mean, that is an important issue for a lot of parents, right? I mean, it's not parents. Most parents don't want to be a teacher, or they're not able to be teacher and to do their work at home. I think here in Sarasota, the school district did a survey and they found like 70% of parents or more wanted to schools to reopen. So it does seem like they are reading the public mood, correct? I mean, the majority, at least in this area, want schools to reopen.
Yes, that's yes. And I think you're going to see variation from county to county. But that's, now we're talking about the fine print,
right? Details.
The messaging out of the White House, which the president said, I want schools to reopen. And if they don't reopen, I will, we'll pull the funding.
Right.
And in fact, now he's pressuring, which you can under the law, for the CDC to change their guidelines to make it easier for schools to fit the guidelines to then reopen. And that's the messaging out there, is that we want kids in the classrooms. And I think that if you start getting outbreaks, no one's going to look at the fine print details. Yeah, that you have distance and you have this option and so forth. They're going to say that the political leadership forced these kids back to school and they got sick. And that's going to be, that's a tough one. Not to mention that, for small government conservatives, which we assume that, that Mr. Trump is, as well as DeSantis, they've been decrying ever since the 1970s, the Federal Department of Education, bigfooting states and local and counties on making school decisions. And now they're saying we want every kid in the school.
Well, we have some of that too in Florida with there's so much confusion over this because Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran basically announced this over Twitter, making it sound like it will happen. But the state in its order also allows districts to make the decision on when and how to open their own campuses. It's similar to what the president is doing. There seems to be almost a little bit of a political dynamic here where Trump and DeSantis are both trying to cast themselves as pro-opening, economy people, political figures. And they're going to leave it then to the local communities, whether it be the states in Trump's case, and then down to the district level in DeSantis's case, to really make the final decision on whether or not schools are open in a hybrid fashion, partly on campus, off campus, or are they going to be open, very much in the conventional way that we always think of school openings. There, as Antonio points out, there's a lot of parents that are concerned about that idea of a regular, traditional school opening. But there seems to be this kind of, it's all part of this defiant approach by the Republican administrations, it seems like, toward the virus, where we're going to forge ahead. But then it comes down to local people fighting back against that approach, saying it's not well conceived.
Yeah. And you've both mentioned that Trump has really seized on this. I mean, he obviously thinks that this is a winning issue, that this is popular with parents. And it does seem like a lot of parents want the schools to reopen. But John, I wonder if you still think this could backfire. I mean, just because you want something to happen doesn't mean that it can happen. I mean, we've seen this with the economy. It's like we want the economy to reopen. Everybody wants the economy to be going well, for businesses to be reopened, but the virus has shut down businesses on its own. We're seeing restaurants close because they're worried about the safety of their patrons and of their staff, regardless of whether the government forces it. I mean, if the schools reopen and you get outbreaks in the schools and a teacher gets sick and God forbid, teachers or students die, the schools could end up closing anyway, and then people will say, well, you did this recklessly. I mean, is there a chance that this backfires on the governor and his administration?
Oh, I think very much so, if it goes this way. I think to a certain degree, in the end, maybe we will not see it quite as forcefully as the order made it sound like they wanted to see it.
Yeah, it does seem like that... a lot of this throughout this pandemic, we've seen a lot of we want this. We all want this to happen, but whether it can really happen under the current circumstances with the virus is another question. Well, even as the state is mandating that schools reopen, some communities are taking further steps to roll back their reopening efforts. The mayor of Miami-Dade County announced this week that restaurants must discontinue in-person dining and short-term vacation rentals are outlawed again. Meanwhile, more cities and counties are adopting mandatory mask ordinances, putting pressure on DeSantis to consider a statewide mask rule, which he has resisted, even as other conservative governors like Greg Abbott in Texas are putting mask requirements in place. DeSantis did ban alcohol consumption at bars again recently, but he seems to be digging in on further rolling back the reopening or instituting new health regulations like a statewide mask ordinance. John, how much do you think of this is driven by the governor's relationship with President Trump, who has really been the biggest cheerleader for getting everything back to normal, regardless of what's happening with the virus?
Oh, absolutely. It does seem like the governor is trying to do everything he can to bolster the president's messaging on the virus and maybe trying to keep loyal that base of voters that just sees Trump as a, you know, defiant disruptor of the deep state and Washington swamp. Of course, in the pandemic, maybe some of those same disruptive qualities don't make sense. The mask requirement now has emerged as a kind of a dividing line. Zach, you wrote about this very well just about a week ago, how it so clearly has cleaved Florida, polarized it, where you know, people are in one corner or another over whether or not to wear a mask. Trump supporters seem to view masks as a breach of their freedom and a symbol of that this pandemic is big. Well, something that a lot of not just public health people, but a lot of regular folks around the state and the county and the country and the globe also feel. But Trump just sees us getting better and better with it every day, even though the numbers don't match the rhetoric. DeSantis, to the extent that he can, he's supporting Trump's view. Like we said, he anticipated the White House's push to reopen schools. He was quick to reopen the state in May and expand that reopening in June, again, just like Trump wanted. DeSantis ordered 1 million tablets of hydroxychloroquine when the president said it might work, although a lot of science has since said that it could actually kill more people than it cures. But all told, there's DeSantis with the president all the way. Now some of these stands, I guess, maybe in the end become largely symbolic, like the masks. Last I checked, more than 70 governments across Florida had required masks for indoor events. So maybe it becomes sort of like the statewide shelter in place back in March, where a growing number of counties were doing it a week before the governor eventually gave in and issued a stay-at-home order for April. And of course, that order came only after the White House also enacted similar guidelines for the nation. But it's no secret that DeSantis sees a route to the White House himself, probably in 2024. Ideally, he'd think in the middle of his second term as Florida governor, and he wants to retain that Trump base of voters, which has proved you know, incredibly loyal. If Trump doesn't win re-election this fall, DeSantis loses his mentor, but that base has to land somewhere, and perhaps the governor sees this unswerving Trump loyalty as paying off with those voters who would be you know, really lost in the wilderness of a Joe Biden presidency. But of course, if Trump wins in the fall, the president's loyalty, that's also going to probably get repaid, most likely with you know, incredible access and adoration from the White House, with DeSantis and his double Ivy League education already something that has earned him, you know, endless praise from Trump. Maybe it'll eventually turn into even an endorsement as his natural successor. But I don't know. You know, we're getting ahead of ourselves now when we're talking about the 2024 presidential race. But we'll have to see how this pandemic plays out first.
Antonio, Trump has said that that people wearing masks is a political statement against him. And I've talked to Republicans who think that, you know, the Democrats are just trying to push these policies to hurt the economy and to hurt Trump. And that basically this is all political. But, you know, critics of Trump and DeSantis would argue just the opposite, that they're pushing policies that they think are good for them in the 2020 election, but are not necessarily driven by science or even necessarily what's the best thing for the economy. A lot of people have argued that, you know, the best thing for the economy would be to get the virus under control. But, you know, obviously the president has pushed to reopen things, to reopen schools, to reopen businesses, to limit the regulations on people. How much of this do you think is driven by the fact that, and DeSantis echoing him, is driven by the fact that they want to present a certain image heading into the presidential election in a critical swing state like Florida?
Well, absolutely. First of all, I think the mask, two issues. I mean, number one, the mask issue is, you know, this is classic Tea Party, individual freedoms, don't tread on me politics. We've seen this for over and over and over. And in fact, last week, Mike Pence was asked during a press conference about, you know, when he's the first meeting of the task force in the last 2 months, public meeting. And he's asked about the rally that was held in Tulsa and the one that they held in Phoenix. And basically he said, well, let me remind you that, you know, a pandemic does not trample our constitutional rights. I mean, that was the ode, the dog whistle to the basic, you know, we're out there defending your rights, and it's your right to wear a mask or not. And the force of you, a mask on you, is nanny state, big government, you know, big government treading on the rights of the individual. So I think that the mask issue is clearly, you know, an ode to the base. Now, the issue of, you know, the reopening, and I think everything that John said is correct. I mean, there's the linkage between DeSantis and Trump on these issues is unmistakable, and it is driven by all the factors that John mentioned. I do think in Florida, there's another component, and that is the failures and the frustrations with the unemployment benefit system. If you're going to be shut down, if you're going to shut down the economy, then you need an assistance system to those people who are losing their jobs. And this is a service economy. Florida is very much a service economy. And we saw over and over in April and May, every one of these DeSantis press conferences was dominated by talk about the failures of this unemployment benefit system and that the fact that it only pays $275 a week. You know, the more that you open up the economy, the more that you get people to work, that discussion is no longer being had. We're not, when he does his daily briefings, we're not really talking about the unemployment benefit system anymore. And that is both economics and it's politics.
And that's going to run out. I mean, the federal supplement for unemployment, that $600 a week that people can get, that runs out at the end of the month. The PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program money that businesses are getting to keep employees on the payroll, you know, that's all been spent or it's dwindling now. So a lot of this coronavirus aid is running out. I mean, we're reaching a bit of a cliff here where it could really explode in terms of people who are struggling, who don't have any more assistance. Do you think that this is all about trying to, you know, kind of find some way to mitigate that without having another big aid package?
The aid package is one question. The problem is that we continue to hear, even the Paycheck Protection Plan, you know, we continue to hear cases of big time businesses getting millions of dollars that we were told was supposed to go to the mom and pop down the street. And this has become a political football. And I think basically at this point that they would just like to get that entire discussion off the map. Everybody's going back to work. You know, we're managing the crisis, live with it, is the mantra, and just, you know, we're back at work. We're managing the health crisis, and we're moving forward. I think that's the message they want to send, and that's what they want to that's what Trump wants to campaign on, and it makes a lot of sense to be, you know, other than the fact that we are in the middle of a pandemic and we're seeing, you know, thousands and thousands of cases reported every day. Other than that, that would work.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if the hospital system can be maintained without getting completely overwhelmed, and you're not seeing the death rate go up dramatically, it's possible that, you know, that's a message that could potentially resonate for a good number of people. But
and that's what we've been talking about in this podcast a few times, you know, that hospital vacancy utilization rate number. You know, what's the magic number? That what point do you have to start shutting down again because your hospitals would get overwhelmed? That's what's driven all of this from the start, is the fact that can your hospital system take in the higher number of cases?
Well, we're seeing it start to get strained. I mean, there's been reporting that some ICUs are filling up. So it's not clear that this is a strategy that's going to work for areas that are big hotspots. But the governor and the president certainly seem interested in seeing how it plays out. So we'll have to wait and see. Well, Florida's coronavirus response is especially important, as we mentioned, for national politics, because the state plays such a central role in electing presidents as the nation's largest battleground. It's not surprising that Trump is keeping a close eye on what's happening here. He probably needs to win Florida to win re-election. So it was noteworthy that he recently decided to bring Susie Wiles back onto his Florida campaign team. Wiles was co-chair of Trump's 2016 campaign in Florida, and she also helped steer DeSantis and former Governor Rick Scott to victory when it looked like they were struggling. Wiles clashed with some in DeSantis's inner circle and ended up being sidelined after the governor's victory. But now Trump is bringing her back on with 4 months to go before Election Day. Polls consistently have shown Trump trailing Joe Biden in Florida. Antonio, do you think this campaign shakeup is a sign that Trump is worried about his standing here?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and the fact that bringing back Susie Wiles with, you know, her track record of victory probably should make the Biden folks somewhat nervous, too.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I mean, she's a winner, right? I mean,
yeah. And, now the interesting thing is, you know, do they hit the panic button? And we'll know that if they bring back Steve Bannon. and are they sinking? We'll know that if they bring back the Mooch. You know, remember him. But in all seriousness, you know, there is beyond that, there is a real tension. And we've been reporting on this and talking to folks. There's a real tension between the Trump base, meaning these independent Trump fan clubs and groups that are organizing a lot of these pro-Trump rallies. There's a lot of tension between them and the Florida Republican Party. And the Trump base arguing that the GOP, the state GOP, is not doing enough on voter registration. And sure enough, you know, the Democrats have been doing very well on voter registration, to the point where the Democrats that are always bemoaning everything are even saying, yeah, we're doing really well on this. So there's reason to be nervous beyond what the polls are saying. I think structurally, what you're looking at, the electorate in Florida and who's out there and who seems to be really organized, there's reason for them all to be very nervous. In addition to that, there are now these self-inflicted wounds. And one is coming up on Friday with the visit of, you know, President Trump to Doral and the Southern Command down in Miami. And this would be an opportunity for the president, you know, to talk up, you know, local politics and, you know, the need to win seats in Congress. And one of the most contested seats is that one in Southern Miami-Dade, where Democrat incumbent, you know, Debbie Mercosell Powell is up against the Dade County, Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez. And this is the big opportunity for a GOP pickup in the U.S. House. If Jimenez can put together, you know, and win that seat. And yet we've seen this week, you know, some tension between him and DeSantis. DeSantis, basically, his team released a memo yesterday suggesting that, you know, that the whole issue in Miami-Dade with the delays in contact tracing and that process is because the mayor's staff, quote unquote, kept changing the parameters and, quote unquote, you know, signaling that maybe they didn't know what they were doing or didn't know what they wanted and weren't on top of things. So, you know, that's not really good for that to blow up, you know, a few days before the president comes to town and an opportunity to rally the base and rally the folks. So they've got, it's not just, you know, what the polls are saying, that showing that Biden has, you know, a lead beyond the margin of error in Florida. It's this also this issue of organizationally that, you know, there are folks within the base that are saying we're not doing enough on voter registration and organization. And then there's even these issues with even rifts and tensions within the different political leaders in the state. So they've got some work to do. And, you know, obviously, you know, Susie Wiles is an ace. And if there's anybody that can fix it, it's her.
What do you think, John? Do you think Trump has reason to be nervous? I mean, Republicans like to point out that a lot of polls showed Trump losing in 2016, and he was able to eke out a victory, including here in Florida. When I talk to Republicans, they say they're as enthusiastic for Trump as they've ever been, or maybe even more so. I was talking to a Republican party chair recently, and he said people are on fire for Trump. They love Trump. And when you look at what Trump has been doing, he's really been playing to the base on issues, whether it's, you know, law and order in the wake of some of these protests and other issues. You know, he really seems to be doing what he did in 2016, which is, you know, going hard and really pushing issues that appeal to the base in the hopes that he'll goose turnout, which worked in Florida in 2016. I mean, he didn't have to win swing voters. He won in conservative parts of the state by boosting turnout in places like rural Florida, like places like, you know, Southwest Florida, you know, places like the Panhandle. Do you think he's got more room to just get more of his base voters out and you know, pull off another win?
I think that's what they're banking on, and I think that's what Susie Wiles can bring to the campaign. She, for Florida Republicans, as Antonio was pointing out there with her history with DeSantis and Scott, I mean, she really is, for Republicans, a kind of miracle worker. She has a grip on conservative Florida. She's using a strategy that is very similar to what Karl Rove had used back in 2004 for George W. Bush in his victory in Florida. Of course, this coming after the squeaker of an election in 2000. Instead, in 2004, Rove, just like Wiles, she focuses on the exurban areas of the Panhandle, Central Florida, the region west of Jacksonville, those communities around Gainesville, all these places in Florida that are very red Florida, but you've got to get the vote out. And she knows how to get that done. And I think that could be critical for Trump in the end.
Yeah, and she's done it three times, so we'll see if she can do it a fourth. Well, let's go to some numbers here. John, your number was 7,500.
Yeah, I came in a little bit high this week with that. That number basically looks at what is going to be the capacity crowd at the Republican National Convention next month at Jacksonville's ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena. That's half of what the facility can hold. But remember, we're still under a 50% capacity order for indoor gatherings under Governor DeSantis, who at this point looks like he's not going to be able to lift that standard, even for his mentor, President Trump, who really wanted a big show in Jacksonville. Now, a little bit of backstory. We all remember, you know, Jacksonville got the celebration end of the convention when host city Charlotte, North Carolina, talked about having only a scaled down event because of the coronavirus. Trump got into a snit with the state's Democratic governor over the order. And last month, the fun part of the convention was set for Jacksonville, with the expectation that the state, you know, what at that point was on a good path in managing the virus, and the likelihood that DeSantis would be going further forward with reopening by the time the August convention rolled around. Well, it's not August yet, but it's July, and Florida some days accounts for 20% of all the new coronavirus cases reported in the nation. It just doesn't look like DeSantis would consider relaxing that 50% rule. Just this week, DeSantis talked more about the need for people to socially distance, avoid crowds, and for older Floridians to basically stay home. DeSantis isn't looking to roll back the state's reopening. Nowhere does he go near that. But he doesn't sound like he's ready to relax any standards either. So, you know, you've already seen this week several mostly older Republican senators, U.S. senators, have already said they're not coming. They didn't say it directly, but you've got to think it's at least in part out of coronavirus concerns. And the party is struggling to raise more money to finance the Jacksonville portion of the convention. Even Trump now is saying that he's, quote unquote, flexible about the convention, or at least its size. So who knows what August holds for us. you got to wonder at this point, though, would a Zoom call renomination for the president be enough?
Yeah, they moved the convention out of North Carolina to Florida because they wanted to have a big party. And it looks like the coronavirus is going to put a damper on that. So we'll see, though. There's still 6 weeks, in Jacksonville, Mayor Lenny Curry, the former chair of the Republican Party of Florida, instituted a mask requirement, and he's boosting testing. He seems to be trying to get the virus under control as much as possible before the convention, maybe with the idea of, letting it go on a little less inhibited than some people might like. But we'll have to wait and see where the virus is in a few weeks. Antonio, you had 117. What's that all about?
Yeah, 117 is the number of days from March 15th to July 11th. And that's a day that March 15th was the day that Disney World closed. And July 11th is the day that it will start reopening. And this is in terms of the whole discussion of reopening. Disney World is the biggest game in town. Now, it may seem counterintuitive for the most, arguably the most popular theme park resort on the planet to be opening in the middle of a state that is one of the epicenters of the coronavirus resurgence here. But the fact of the matter is this week, Governor Ron DeSantis said that he is perfectly convinced that it will be open safely. And he got bipartisan support on that from U.S. Representative Darren Soto, an Orlando Democrat, a member of the Florida's congressional delegation, who also said that he felt that Disney was taking the right steps to reopen safely, just as Universal and SeaWorld has done. And this, this bipartisanship on the reopening of Disney, I think, speaks to the larger bipartisanship on the way the economy is being reopened. Now, you have a lot of tension between Democrats and Republicans over wearing the mask and so forth. But when it comes to reopening and reclosings, they, without admitting it, there's common denominators. And one of them is at this conference call earlier this week, the Florida Democrats on it said that, that they should close beaches and close bars and gyms, but regionally, meaning that only in adjacent counties where you're seeing a real resurgence of cases, meaning that in other places of the state where there's not a spike in cases, they're silent. They don't see a need to close there. And that is basically what DeSantis himself has been saying for so long, which is, I want to manage the reopening so that we address spikes where they're worst and not hinder economic growth and economic reopenings in counties that are not being impacted. So for all the fighting back and forth, it does appear that when it comes to reopening, and reclosing, Democrats and Republicans seem to be on the same page, saying it differently, but on the same page.
Well, also being against Disney when you're a central Florida elected official is not a comfortable place to be in for somebody like Darren Soto.
Well, and he did note that the unemployment rate in that part of Central Florida is 30%.
It's interesting. I mean, amusement parks have opened in places overseas with pretty strict health requirements, masks and things like that. There was a video from Japan that some people found amusing, where apparently they banned screaming at some amusement parks in Japan. And there was a video where like one of the executives for the amusement park was like riding the roller coaster and they didn't scream at all. And then he said, please scream inside your heart, which I think could be a motto for all of us in 2020. Well, my number is 3, which is the number of businesses owned by Congressman Vern Buchanan that received paycheck protection loans from the federal government. The Paycheck Protection Program gave out hundreds of billions of dollars to businesses across the country to help keep employees on the payroll during the coronavirus lockdowns. It's credited for saving millions of jobs, but the program, which was pitched as a small business assistance effort and is run by the Federal Small Business Administration, also is getting criticized for giving a lot of money to subsidiaries of large corporations that have great financial resources, and to politically connected individuals. Buchanan is a Longbow Key Republican who is one of the richest members of Congress. He has ownership interest in three car dealerships that got the PPP loans. There's no evidence that he received any special benefits because of his position, but it's always notable when members of Congress are benefiting from programs they created. At least 12 members of Congress benefited from the PPP loans, and so did groups across the political spectrum, including the Florida Democratic Party, which recently announced that they're giving back their PPP money after being criticized. So, it's good to have transparency. Those the names of people who got the loans came out this week, and so now the public can see what this program was all about, and it's causing some ripples here. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy and Joseph Rosano, and thanks to all of you for listening. Stay safe. We're out of here.